Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to our podcast. My name is Jacob Owen.
I'm Greta Fritz.
And we have the wonderful pleasure of having Stacey Ackerman from Wells Fargo.
Very nice to meet both of you.
Very nice to meet you, too. So I guess just kind of our first question is, what is your kind of background that led you to college, just kind of your life before Wells Fargo in college?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a small town in the central part of the state, Jamestown, North Dakota, and neither of my parents had an opportunity to go to college, and that was one of the things that was just really important to them, is making sure that both of their children had that opportunity. They knew how important that was in terms of getting a good job, being able to support your family. And so even though neither of them had that opportunity, it was something that was just really important for my brother and I. My mom grew up on a small farm near South Central North Dakota, around Ashley, Wishick area, good German-Russian country. My dad grew up in South Dakota, small town Eureka, South Dakota. And, you know, his dad died when he was 5 or 6 years old. And at that time, there weren't a lot of social service programs to help. His mom took in laundry to feed the family, you know, would do some ironing. And so he became a breadwinner pretty young to take care of his siblings. So for them, education, reading, those kinds of things were just always encouraged.
Awesome. So after you graduated high school, you went on to NDSU, and then you went to UMary, and then later on you went back to school at Rasmussen. Could you kind of tell us a little bit about that process and how you decided to go to each one of those schools and what made you decide?
Yeah. So with the values my parents transmitted to me around education, it was something that I wanted to make sure I carried on. And so right out of NDSU, believe it or not, I wasn't in business to start out with. My degrees were in English and sociology. And I was on my way to grad school at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln and had an opportunity to temp that summer at Norwest Bank. And I was in their human resources department. And it was just really fun to see what the opportunities were within the bank for career and benefits and helping individuals on their financial path. So I was offered a trainee position, and they make you do everything as a banker trainee, teller line, customer service. At that time, we were acquiring banks, which was really fun to go out and do the due diligence on a bank. What would you pay for the bank? What are the risks inherent at this institution? So I had that opportunity, and you know, as you're looking for jobs, a lot of organizations will help you pay for additional education. And so as I was in the trainee program, that's when I understood more about their tuition reimbursement program and had an opportunity to work on my master's in management. So while I really felt like I had the communication and the people side, I wanted to have more of that technical side around leadership. And so University of Mary at that time had a fantastic program for those of us who were working all day and then to pursue your master's in the evening. So I had a cohort. There were roughly 15 of us that spent 18 months together, one class at a time, one night a week. And Norwest, I had $5,000 each year that they paid towards my master's. So that was just a phenomenal program. And as I moved through the organization and leadership, one of the areas that I wanted to have a stronger background in was accounting. And I looked at various programs, and I travel a ton for work. The last 3 weeks I've been on the road. So any type of traditional classroom program wouldn't work for me. Even one night a week wouldn't work for me. So being able to do a program completely online, if I'm sitting in a hotel room in Dallas or Minneapolis or San Francisco, I can still meet those deadlines and learn. So for me, it was having some of that confidence and having more of that accounting background was just a crucial piece that I felt like I was missing.
Awesome. Awesome. So I guess kind of our next question is just kind of tell us how you got into Wells Fargo and kind of the different roles you've got in Wells Fargo, because we saw you had a bunch of roles in Wells Fargo. So just kind of how you got from point A to now.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's serendipity. I was just temping. I had no plans of working at a financial institution, and starting out as a temp and then moving into the trainee program and getting that broad background of what financial institutions do was just tremendous. So I think if anyone asks you, what do you want to be when you grow up? It's really hard to know, you know, even in the academic setting, it starts you down a path, but until you understand more about what the opportunities are and what you do day to day, you just have to experience that. And one of the things I feel really fortunate about is, you know, starting out as a trainee, you had exposure to, like, we would be on the phone some days, collections for our bad debts. You would be working with consumer credit underwriting, approving loans where someone was at the dealership wanting to buy a car. There were a lot of backroom operations in terms of, you can imagine, fraud, check processing. There's the front room operations around, are you lending to a business or an individual? And then all the supporting functions around marketing and human resources. So as I was saying, I feel fortunate because where I work, I've been able to have multiple different career paths and jobs without ever having to leave. You know, sometimes you don't think about those things like vacation time, your benefits, your retirement plan. But I've been there for 25 years now, and I spent time everywhere from learning and development when we had a big computer system conversion, starting a bank de novo from scratch up in Grand Forks, to human resources, working with recruiting, affirmative action, our retirees, moving into, at that time it was called the trust department, and being a junior portfolio manager. So sitting down with clients and understanding what are their goals, what do they want to accomplish, how do we set up their asset allocation to make sure that they can achieve those goals, whether it be for their family, for their communities, or whoever it is. I moved over to the fiduciary side, more of the administration side. And not a lot of people know what trust departments do. Mm-hmm. You know, they know what banks are, but you hear trust and you're thinking, well, that's sort of legal and I don't know what you do. And as a fiduciary, you need to make sure you're putting yourselves in the shoes of your clients, that you're not making decisions what is in the best interest of you, but rather them. So a lot of times we are entrusted with individuals' funds. Let's say somebody passes away. A trust department can serve as a personal representative or executor to carry out their last will and testament or whatever their final instructions are to get their assets to whoever those beneficiaries are. Sometimes it might be a charity, family members, etc. Sometimes really sad situations, we serve as conservator or guardian. And so anything that you do for yourself financially, we would take care of. So let's say, for example, you have someone whose parents have been killed in some type of accident, and there's life insurance, there's retirement accounts. And if they didn't leave any type of will or trust or instructions to protect those funds, we would be responsible for all the financial decisions. So making sure that their needs were being met, that they had health insurance, that school was being paid for, that their tax returns are being done. Again, anything that you do for yourself financially to make sure their needs are being met and that those funds aren't being squandered. Sometimes you hear about family members who've been entrusted for others who've expect this inheritance or expect this money when they turn 18 and it's disappeared because there aren't any checks and balances. Sometimes we work with older individuals. Maybe one spouse was in charge of all the finances. In this case, it'd probably be my husband someday who's going to need the help of a trust department because I take care of all of our investments, asset allocation, taxes, health insurance. So sometimes as individuals are older, they need help with those kinds of services as well, which I love that combination of business and human side. And then from there, I've been able to move into more leadership roles, leading brokerage, private banking, financial planning, and trust. So like I said, I love what I do in wealth management because it's that real blend of that personal side of things, that English and sociology with the accounting and management.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. So you're a manager right now and you travel around. How often are you traveling and how do you kind of handle that with your family and personal life?
You know, travel certainly has its rewards and it has its drawbacks. So my immediate region that I cover are North and South Dakota, Greater Minnesota, and then we tip over a little bit into Western Wisconsin and the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And if I had the job today back when my children were younger, that would have been really hard. We have three children. We have two in college, one still at home. And when they were younger, I didn't travel. It was more occasional for certifications, continuing education, you know, maybe 1 or 2 weeks a year. So I would not have been able to do that when they were young. now that they're in college, they're living their own lives. Every once in a while I joke, I text like, welfare check, are you still alive? You haven't checked in with your mom, just making sure. But we still have the eighth grader at home. And so it can be challenging. You know, ideally I would travel every other week and only like two nights or three nights. But it doesn't always work that way. Last week I was gone Tuesday through Friday. This week I was gone Monday through Wednesday. And fortunately, I have a very supportive spouse. He's an electrical engineer. He's a three-time grad from NDSU here. He just finished his PhD in materials and nanotechnology. And he's home and he takes care of a lot of things for me, but also as a working mom, it was hard for me to pay for someone to clean my house, help with laundry, or pick the kids up after school or before school. But as I moved along in my career, I realized that we're all a lot happier. It may mean I work longer someday. I might not retire as early as I want. But when I can be home, I can be home with them doing the things that we want. We can go to the lake. We could, you know, kayak. We could hike. We can do some of those things. So having family around also has been really helpful. My parents have retired. They've graduated into a different part of their life. And so every once in a while, you know, I try not to ask too much of them, but they can fill in as well. So it's really important to surround yourself with family and people that can help, especially if you're going to be a working mom and travel.
So I guess our next question is just kind of what are some trends that you see in the banking industry or even just at Wells Fargo?
Wow. Just like everywhere, the change is rampant and it's incredibly fast. And I think back to when I first started in banking, at month end, we used to have some of our retired team members come back in at month end and they would sort all the check blanks and stuff them in envelopes and send them out. So your parents used to get an envelope with all of their checks in them with their monthly statement. You know, clearly now that has all changed and continues to evolve. I know my son was having conversations with their friends and they were renting a house near campus and they had to have a cashier's check. And I was like, well, what's a cashier's check? How do I get a cashier's check? So when teenagers and young adults come into the bank, we don't typically issue check blanks anymore. You know, everything is done so much more mobile. So everyone will go to an ATM for cash. You can deposit your checks on your phone on a Sunday night at 10 o'clock. So one of the big trends, obviously, we're seeing is, you know, less foot traffic into the banking locations. It doesn't mean we're doing any less transactions, but it's being done differently. So as I was visiting with some of our retirees, they're like, wow, you know, the bank, it's not as busy as it used to be. Well, it's not as busy physically because transactions are being done, you know, much differently. So it's leveraging technology. You know, fintech is going to be fascinating how that continues to change our industry. One of the things, being a large bank, we certainly have the benefit of a large customer base. We still do have 2 million clients that come into our banks every day. We have, you know, 75 million clients plus. So that gives you that base to be able to explore, to innovate. But sadly, with some of those conveniences, you also have seen a rise in fraud. And so cybersecurity is huge. And I think that's an area where smaller institutions are struggling. You know, you've probably received a call on your credit card saying, hey, were you in Bakersfield, California last night buying four cell phones? Yeah. So it's crazy how the algorithms can pick up those things that are outside of your spending habits. But sadly, the number of, I would say, attempts to breach networks are on the rise as well. American Express receives roughly 460,000 attempts a day to breach their network. So you got the convenience. We love the algorithms. We love being able to check our balances on our phones, set those balance alerts, transfer money, get cash, use, you know, Zelle, Venmo. Those things are all fantastic. But sometimes with convenience comes some of those other risks. So huge challenges around fraud and cybersecurity in our industry.
Yeah, that's scary. So regarding your clients, you kind of touched on this already. Do you mostly have just individual clients or do you also work with some businesses as well?
Yeah, so I work in what's called private wealth. So the majority of our clients are going to be individuals. We kind of joke and say they have arms and legs is who we work with. But we have other teams within the bank, obviously, that work with institutional clients. So we have our commercial bank that would be working with treasury management, checking accounts, credit, loans, working with the employers on setting up retirement accounts like 401k plans and things like that. My team typically will work with the individual investor. So they might be saving for their children's college education using a 529 plan. They may want to know, am I on track to retire at age 60 or 65? What should my investments look like? I have young children. What if something were to happen? Do I need some life insurance to help pay off the mortgage on our house? A lot of our clients, maybe they want to purchase that second house down in Arizona or Texas or Florida. So what our process is with individuals is, you know, we love to just sit down like, you know, what's important to you? Are you philanthropic? Are you worried about your children's college education? Is it your retirement? Are you saving for a dream home? What do you want that legacy to be? So we really want to go through that thorough conversation, be curious, go through a discovery process, and from there be able to design some type of plan, and then we can decide which experts do we need to bring in. What products might you need to solve for those goals that you have? But it's fantastic because we work with a lot of individuals that have that discretionary income, that they're saving for some goal, and that we can help them make that happen someday, which is so rewarding.
Yeah, so you just kind of being wealth management and kind of strictly working with individuals, what are, I guess, some challenges that maybe, because each individual is different, so what are some challenges that come forth with wealth management?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of all the challenges at a macro level is when I first started at the bank, I had a pension plan. The bank put aside money for me for retirement. But as we all know, we're living so much longer and those plans got really expensive. There are very few companies that have a pension plan anymore. My husband works for John Deere. They still have one, which is absolutely fantastic. So as we work with individuals, the other macro trends I would say is higher student loan debt. I know that's something you're probably experiencing. How much do I work? How much can I pay for? How much might I take some loans out for? We're also seeing a lot of individuals become part of that sandwich generation where maybe their parents don't have money that was set aside for retirement, so they're trying to financially support them or take care of their physical needs, but they still have children at home or in college, and so sometimes they're sacrificing, how much do I put away for my future and my retirement and yet take care of my parents as well as my children? So that's where having a plan is just so critical. One of the things I'm so grateful for is when I first started at the bank, there was an individual. Her name was Darlene Jensen. She was in human resources. She was fierce. She was a little bit scary. She had been divorced for many years, raised two daughters on her own, and she talked a lot about that independence, and she sat me down and she goes, okay, we're going to enroll you in your 401k plan today. I know you just graduated from college. I know you think you don't have any money, but if you put in 6%, your company will match you dollar for dollar up to 6%. That's 6% free money. You would be dumb not to do this. And I was looking at her and like I said, she was fierce. I wasn't going to say, no, yeah, I'm not going to do this. But she set me on the right path. So having someone like that, I was so grateful for, because starting young, starting at age 22, being able to put 6%, getting a match of 6%, that is going to give my husband and I so many more opportunities in the future. And I know it's not easy. You know, when you first graduate, you're thinking, I finally got a paycheck. I'm not going to drive that two-door manual Chevy Cavalier that I was driving, hatchback, living in a dive of an apartment. We used to live right off a T-lot, shag carpet, panel walls. The house doesn't even exist anymore. It was by the SAE house. So at that time, fortunately, I had someone who guided me. So I think about Darlene and being able to do that for our clients is, what are your goals? Start small, start incremental, and build on them, and then you will be able to achieve those goals and not procrastinate.
Awesome. So this is more of like a basic question, but what is your absolute favorite part of your day and your job?
You know, is that we talked about the travel, but what I love about the travel and the team is I get all sorts of new experiences and new perspectives, and they can be very humbling, but it makes you step back and not, you know, judge and say, this is the way it should be. So there are times where I get tired. Like last night, I was like, I don't want to go out for dinner. We're going to stay home. We're going to bring in pizza because I was just exhausted. But when I'm in the office day after day after day, I do get a little bit restless. So what I love is being able to get out into our markets, visit with our clients, and I sometimes get good stories and sometimes I get stories where they've been frustrated, where something did not exceed their expectations like we had hoped. But getting out there, connecting with individuals, learning about their stories, their histories, their struggles, and seeing our team members as well. They've got the personal side, but they got that professional side. So being able to coach them to, would you like to be a certified financial planner? Would you like to get your master's? What are some of the things that we can do to continue to develop and grow you? And that's what I love about leadership, is it's about our team members. I, for example, have a regional brokerage manager right now who's working on his certified financial planner designation. He doesn't need it, but it's going to give him more credibility with his advisors. I have, you know, a team member who started working when they were young, didn't finish their undergraduate degree, and that we can put $5,000 away or help them with $5,000 a year to pursue that degree, and then to be able to talk them up to them about their career path and what other jobs that they would like to do. Because I do think it can be easy to be comfortable. It can be easy to be complacent and say, I know exactly what I'm doing in my job. It can be really scary to take that next job, try something different, but that keeps us all relevant and fresh and contributing. So I love the people side of the business, whether it's our clients or our team members and helping them.
Yeah, for sure. So just kind of another basic question is kind of what your average day looks like, if you can really quantify that at all.
Yeah, it might be a little depressing because I sit through a lot of meetings and a lot of teleconferences, but maybe what I'll do is I'll give you an example of this week. So Monday, I came into the office. We always have a Monday morning call because we need to know, hey, what's going on in the world geopolitically that's going to impact the market? So the call was about Brexit. It was about tariffs. It was about what's coming up with the elections. We're getting into year-end tax planning. What happened in the market last week? What are the economic indicators that are coming up this week that our clients may be asking us about? So every Monday morning, we start out with a half-hour call that really grounds you with what's going on in the greater world. And then this week, I was in Minneapolis Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and we do something called an operating review, and we really delve into our business, looking at our financials. What are the trends? Where are we on the right path? Where do we need to make some adjustments? Do we have the staff in the right market? Do we have the team members with the right credentials? Where are we struggling? So that was Monday through Wednesday. Back in the office yesterday and today, and like I said, sadly, it's a lot of meetings, teleconferences, but it might be meeting one-on-one with a team member where we're looking at what are their objectives and are they on track? Do they have any complaints, any risk issues, any, you know, compliance issues? Are they struggling with some clients? Have they had some success with some clients that they really feel proud of and receive some compliments? So a lot of, you know, those one-on-one conversations. And then from there, it's everything from our property, what's happening up in Duluth, to, you know, we've had Dakota Access Pipeline protesters. We've had Enbridge protesters. We have, like I said, properties issues where the elevator goes out, to we have a team member who's decided to move into an external position. She can work 2.5 days a week with her young children. So now we have to post her position, recruit, find someone in that market. So there's all of the very pedestrian kinds of things where you're having the teleconferences and the meetings, but it's always that coaching that I love. I love that Monday morning meeting because it's a big world out there that impacts all of us and how we're investing and saving and how we're moving forward towards our goals.
Yeah. So regarding your team, what is the biggest challenge you have in leading them or being a leader in that team?
What I love about wealth management is we tend to have very long tenured team members. We have someone who just got their recognition certificate for 45 years at Wells Fargo, which is really cool. So we have tenure, we have experience, they're professionals. We have a lot of attorneys, CPAs, paralegals, finance majors, MBAs, CFPs, CFAs, very credentialed, really smart people. We get to work with attorneys and accountants out in the community that are part of their advisors. But one of the biggest challenges is a team of roughly 200 team members across 250,000 square miles. So the challenge is I can't get out to that geography, and I don't know necessarily what's going on day to day in Bismarck versus Rapid City versus Eau Claire versus Grand Rapids, Minnesota. So those are some of the challenges, is how do you stay connected when you're really dispersed like that? How do you cast the vision? How do you know where someone's struggling? How do you know what the culture is like in a given office? So while there are just these fantastic things about our team, that dispersed geography can make it challenging. And there's a whole lot of wasted time, you know, driving down the interstate or two-lane highways getting to some of the markets.
Yeah, so just kind of another question regarding leading. What is kind of a moment or moments where you've kind of felt proud of your team or of your leading capabilities?
You know, for me, where I feel proud is when that team member has succeeded. And, you know, they may have their goals, whether it's someone who's earned, I don't know if you know what the CFA designation is. It's an investment designation. Takes roughly 3 years. The first level, you only pass at, usually it's about a 30% pass rate. Very few people finish the program. So anytime we have one of our team members who's passed like a CFA, a CFP, they've finished their master's program where they've invested in themselves and they've done that development, I love celebrating that success because it makes them better and ultimately our clients are better. So I think I'm going back to where we were at the beginning when we talked about that education and that development. That's the part that excites me so much. And we can't be complacent. We have to continue to learn and grow because things have changed dramatically from 1994 when we were putting those checks in the month-end statement to now just depositing your check on your phone and never seeing it again.
Mm-hmm. Regarding your clients, how do you decide and what do you look for in each one of your clients? So do you kind of just get whoever applies or what's kind of the process behind that?
Yeah, you know, so as we think about clients in wealth management, we have one team, and one of the things that they're very particular about is they look at the three A's. You know, certainly are there assets to invest? Is there something that we can help with? Are they willing to be advocates for us and what we do? Are they willing to take advice? You know, there's nothing more frustrating to say, if this is your goal to retire at age 65 and you need to put away, you know, $100 per paycheck, and they don't do that, there's nothing more frustrating when someone doesn't take your advice. Mm-hmm. So that's one area that they look at is do they have some assets to invest? Will they take our advice? Will they be advocates for the planning process and really engage with us from a conversation perspective? And you know what? Not all clients are good clients. And when many of us start in the business, we're like, hey, we'll take anyone, right? We're growing our business, we're growing our asset base. But then over time, you realize that there are also some clients to be cautious of. Are there risk issues? In our world, you really have to be careful of anti-money laundering. You have to know your clients. What was that source of wealth? Where is it coming from? So we call that AML, KYC. There are some industries where, you know, someone called me just a couple weeks ago. They were in the cannabis industry, wanted to work with us. Well, states have legalized marijuana, but federal laws have not. So as a federal bank, because of that source of wealth, we can't do business with them. So you also have to be really cautious of who you're working with. The other piece of that is reputation. You know, you've probably heard of Madoff. You've heard of others. There was an individual in Minneapolis one time who was, you know, initially everyone thought was this fantastic business person, and as more things didn't add up and vet out, that house of cards came down, and there were a lot of banks that were on the hook for lending to that individual. So not all clients are good clients. You need to understand where their wealth is coming from. You need to understand their reputation, because their reputation becomes entwined with yours. You know, you even think of Epstein now, and all of a sudden there was one individual that was his banker, and now her name is getting pulled into that. It wasn't what she had done, but it was who she had associated with. So definitely knowing your clients, knowing who you serve best as well. You know, there's just some clients you're going to feel more comfortable around than others. And so knowing where's your expertise, what do you love to do, who do you resonate with? I think that's really important too.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And just kind of another question is, how do you kind of compete with like U.S. Bank, or even maybe more locally like Bell Bank, and like what separates Wells Fargo from U.S. Bank or Bell Bank?
Yeah. So when you think of financial services, it is becoming more commoditized. So a bank account is a bank account. Maybe there's a little bit of incremental yield. We used to be able to be the keepers of Morningstar reports and all sorts of stock research, but so much more is available online. You can do your trades yourself. There's some firms who are even executing stock trades for zero, right? Because they're going to make the money on the float or your deposits that you have. So you really do have to figure out, what are you going to do differently? Why are they going to come to you? And I look at it as it's human plus technology. And for a lot of us, I've seen some studies where they say that 2/3 of jobs are going to disappear. That's what Americans are worried about over, say, the next 25 years. And there will be jobs that disappear, but there'll be more jobs that are created. And so to me, it's that combination of technology and human. And at Wells Fargo, a couple of things that we do differently is we have an innovation lab. So we are looking at, we all hate having 12 different passwords with, you know, different configurations, and always are forgetting them. So, you know, how do we use bio? How do we use face screens, thumbprints to access your accounts? So there's that innovation lab in San Francisco who's looking at what's next for Wells Fargo. We have our Cyber Fusion Center, where we've had the military visit. You know, we have set aside $1 billion for cybersecurity. I quoted earlier how American Express has 460,000 attempts to breach their network every day. So you want to know that you have a financial institution who is protecting all of your financial information. So those are some ancillary things around technology. But on the human side of it as well, to me, it really comes down to that one-on-one relationship that you establish in your community. Do you trust someone? Do you know their brand? Do you know their reputation? And the other piece is families are getting really interesting. I love the show Modern Family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there isn't the traditional family anymore. So when we work with someone in wealth management, sure, we're helping them with what are your goals? What are your assets? What do you need to save? Do you have the right asset allocation? Are you on the, you know, the right path? How much are you spending? But one area that we've created that may surprise you is something called family dynamics. So oftentimes in wealth management, 80% of that wealth dissipates by the third generation. So patriarch, matriarch have made their wealth. The next generation has gotten accustomed to a certain lifestyle. And then the third generation, they inherit it, and each time there's seepage with that. And a lot of times it's because we haven't had those good conversations around what does it mean, what does money mean to you? What are your values? What's your responsibility around money? And so research has been done around what happens in those families that retain their wealth. What's the one differentiator? And it may surprise you, it's philanthropy. It's those families who've had conversations to say, here's how much you spend, here's how much you save, and here's how much you share and give away. And they have those conversations around philanthropy. So believe it or not, yes, it's all about money. It's all about numbers. It's finance. It's accounting. It's asset allocation and investments. But it's also those softer skills around planning and, you know, family dynamics and understanding parenting amidst prosperity and helping with those conversations. So those are some of the things that make us different. You know, we have a psychologist in Chicago that I can pull in, and we're working with a family right now because dad made a lot of money, but sadly the kids aren't coming to the Thanksgiving dinner that happened last year, and he wants to remedy that. So those are some of the things that make it different.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. So just to wrap up here, we wanted to ask, if you could go back and tell your college self one piece of advice, what would that be?
You know, I was way too serious in college. I worked, I coached gymnastics, I judged. I've been married now to my high school sweetheart. We went from high school to college together to married life with three children. But as I think back, I wish I'd made a little bit more time for fun and getting involved in campus. So my daughter just joined a sorority. She's going to be a civil engineer, and she just joined AGD. And I see the things that she's doing with the friendships she's developing, the philanthropy, some of those bonds that she's making in college. So for me, I was just way too serious. And some of it was out of necessity. I certainly had to pay the rent and had to pay for food. And, you know, we didn't have a lot. My parents helped a little bit. But I love that my daughter can have that different experience and bond, because I know I have some friends that have their best friends from college, and I feel like I was too serious. I missed out on that. So yes, pursue and be serious about your academics, but make sure you have those bonds and those friendships that you carry with you later in life.
Yeah, we appreciate it. So I think that's all the time we have, but we greatly appreciate you taking some time out of your day to come talk to us.
It's always fun to reminisce and think back. What would you do differently? But important, right? Not to ruminate.
Well, thank you.